This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachowiak. We lost a great one yesterday. Music legend Doc Watson died in Winston-Salem. He was 89. Doc was born and raised in North Carolina, produced some of the purest tones you'll ever hear with his voice and his guitar.
Let's do a little country counterpoint now, son.
Doc first came to prominence in the 1960s when he introduced to the rest of the country the hymns and ballads that he learned in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina. President Clinton gave Doc a National Medal of Arts in 1997. He said there's probably not a baby boomer alive who hasn't at least tried to pick a guitar like Doc Watson. Joining me now by phone are Barry Poss and George Holt. Barry's the founder of Sugar Hill Records. He and Doc Watson recorded together for many years. George is the director of performing arts at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Gentlemen, thanks for being on the program.
Glad to be here, Frank.
George, you first saw Doc Watson play years ago at the Smithsonian. Can you describe that experience for me?
Oh, I'll just never forget it. Frank, it really charted my life's course. A very visionary folklorist by the name of Ralph Rinsler created, produced, founded that festival in 1967. And, of course, it was Ralph Rinsler who discovered Doc Watson near his home in Deep Gap, North Carolina, and brought him out into the wider world, first up north, but eventually to the Smithsonian, where I first saw him and was just completely transformed and made me determine that at least I realized I would never become a musician of the caliber of Doc Watson, but I thought I might have the opportunity to create programs that would allow other people, particularly North Carolinians, to experience the magic of Doc Watson and other great North Carolina traditional musicians.
You must have been interested in music by then and listened to a lot of music. What was it that about the way he played, the way he sang that captivated you or made him seem so different?
Well, I think that sort of gets at the heart of the matter, really. If you're old enough like I am to have been around certainly in the 60s when folk music was popular, but it was being interpreted by urban musicians who were far removed from the roots of the music, who often did a fine job at performing the music. But Doc brought a level of authenticity and authority and power to the music that Just, in my opinion, just blew all of that other more commercially popular folk music out of the water. And I think nearly everybody who became exposed to Doc Watson probably shared that sentiment.
Well, Barry, Doc did become popular. Tell us about his rise to fame, because he really didn't start recording until he was in his 40s, right?
That's correct. Actually, Doc was playing to earn a living for his family, and was playing electric guitar when he was first, say, discovered by Ralph Rinsler, who George mentioned earlier, who came to North Carolina not to find Doc, but to find Clarence Ashley, an old-time musician who had recorded, made 78 RPM records much earlier. And, of course, when he heard Doc, he had the same reaction that George had and that I and countless others have had as well. And in the early 60s, Doc made trips to New York and to Gertie's Folk City and a number of other places up there, and began touring from that point.
Of course, he rode that wave of popularity, the folk revival of the 1960s. He really didn't think anybody else would be interested in his music, did he?
Absolutely. I think, in fact, Doc has said many times, you know, that if it wasn't for Ralph, or it wasn't for his blindness, he might have been a carpenter. I mean, he was playing music because he loved it. It wasn't just the first career choice for him. When the folk revival kind of petered out a little bit later, Doc got a second burst through a very influential record by the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band in the early 70s, Will the Circle Be Unbroken? Mm-hmm. And that, of course, really expanded Doc's fame well beyond the original circle of people who were interested in traditional music.
And you're the founder of Sugar Hill Records. You and Doc produced about a dozen or so albums, right? Tell me how the two of you came to work together.
Well, interestingly enough, I actually came to Doc via his father-in-law. Well before I started Sugar Hill, I was part of a very active old-time music scene here in the Durham-Chapel Hill area. And Doc's father-in-law, Gaither Carlton, was a wonderful old-time fiddler and banjo player in the late 60s and early 70s. I used to go up and visit and play music with him. He was actually of greater interest at that time than Doc. But, of course, that all changed when I started Sugar Hill. And I have to say, I've been very lucky. I've had a career full of highlights working with remarkable artists. But the most personal one for me was a simple phone call, and though it was, 30 years ago, I remember that phone call like it was yesterday. Doc was on the phone, and he just said, "Son, I like the music I hear on your label, and I'd like to make a record for you." And really, that was it. I mean, we made that record and a dozen more, and two were Grammy winners, and two more were Grammy finalists, and it's a relationship that I cherish more than any other throughout my days.
Well, I think both of you have stressed the one thing you always hear about Doc, and that's his authenticity and his real love for the music. And then the other thing that you hear so often is the way he works with other musicians and his humility. I want to play a clip of Doc Watson talking with Terry Gross on Fresh Air in 1988, talking about his fame and how he handled it.
Being accused of being a virtuoso doesn't bother me as bad as people trying to put me on a pedestal, especially when they're my own age. They act like you're a god or something, you know. Lord, I'm just people. Like everybody else, I do play the guitar, but I had to work awful hard at it to learn what I know. If it's a high school age or a younger boy or a girl that does, I let them get away with it. You know, you let them down easy. You don't agree to it, but you let them down easy. But you think somebody up Doc Watson's age would know that Doc's just a normal human being that likes to pick the guitar. He's not a celebrity. I never have felt like I am, you know.
So, Barry, what was he like in the studio working with other musicians?
Well, that clip really strikes at the heart of Doc Watson. And interestingly enough, in the studio, when there are other hot pickers around, there's not a competitive bone in his body. If anything, Doc would always lay back, and we'd almost have to encourage him to be Doc Watson around others. I mean, he was a musician first, and of course had incredible respect for other musicians, even those not in the same league. But there was always a leader amongst equals, and Doc, in a very quiet, humble way, was that leader. Not in an obviously, you know, directorial way, but since all eyes were on him anyways, it would be a head nod or a simple, "Son, I like that," or, you know, "Take it." You know, just remarkable the way he would kind of maneuver and massage the other musicians around him to grasp at what he was getting at.
George Holt, I know you and the others at the North Carolina Museum of Art had been planning a big tribute to Doc Watson on June 30th. First, are you going to go forward?
Yes, Frank. We have a long-planned special concert with Doc, but it was never intended to be just another opportunity to sort of bask in the glory of Doc's brilliant storytelling and guitar picking and singing, but we felt at the outset that it was time to celebrate him and to show our love and appreciation for all that he's given us over these many decades, and we're I had planned to surround him with some of the musicians who he has been closest with over the years, true friends and buddies and wonderful musicians in their own right, and just take a whole day to reflect on his extraordinary life, contribution, and legacy. And we now, in light of the fact that we've lost Doc, it just seemed immediately apparent that the need to gather in his memory and honor is more important than ever. So we are indeed going forward with our programs on June the 30th.
All right, George Holt, Barry Paas, thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
George Holt is the Director of Performing Arts at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Their tribute to Doc Watson, June 30th. And for more details, you can go to ncartmuseum.org. Barry Paas is the founder of Sugar Hill Records. Just ahead, a take a look at mental illness as it applies to children on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, the broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.